Welcome to the Naked Podcaster. Get ready to hear stories of someone brave enough to bear it all. Let's get naked.
Hello, and welcome to the Naked Podcaster. I am your host, Jen Taylor. Today I am with KJ Levan. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jen. Glad to be here. Thank you.
You are welcome. I'm so excited. We have been talking for nearly a year prior to this recording. By the time it releases, it will be definitely over a year. So welcome. Right.
Yes, thank you so much. I like you said, you know, it's been a few delays in scheduling, but we are here. So glad to be here. Excited.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now you don't have a website as we're recording it. If that changes, we'll put it in the show notes, but you are an author. And for that, I know I'm connected with you on Facebook. I'm connected with you on Instagram and possibly on Twitter. If I'm not, I always connect with all of my guests. So I'll make sure that I do that.
Good. Great.
I love supporting you guys. So tell me who you are and how much you love what you're doing.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for that question. Who am I and what do I love doing? I guess I can take it all the way back to my adolescent years. In grade school, as well as high school, I played a variety of sports. And during our annual spring football training, during my junior year in high school, we were lifting weights one day and someone had left a copy of a muscle magazine on the floor. And I picked it up and was immediately consumed with something I had never seen before. So I'm talking pictures of Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the day, Robbie Robinson, Frank Zane, all the legends of some of the legends of bodybuilding. And so as a young, impressionable teenager, that moment really grew into a passion for pumping iron, if you will, and a goal of becoming a professional bodybuilder. But it would have to be in tandem with my corporate aspirations. So once I finished college, my ambitions of becoming a professional bodybuilder continued, and that was along with moving up the corporate ladder. Now, pharmaceuticals was a natural fit as I was already accustomed to looking at the body as a physical, mechanical material, if you will. And I can tell you, Jen, it wasn't easy sitting in the boardroom at times when people were not understanding why I would have to eat so much food, you know, six times a day, drinking so much water. So at one point, you know, I just decided that, hey, I'm just going to start inviting my coworkers to maybe work out, maybe come to a competition. You know, it just offered a new level of appreciation. Not that I needed it, but it was a good way to just not just tell, but also show. So in terms of what sparked my mindfulness journey that I'm on right now, you know, there was a phase in my life where every waking moment until I went to bed, it was dedicated to my career, dedicated to the routine I had had for years. And each week that included working out, of course, relaxing with friends, you know, putting aside work on the weekends, things of that nature. But that was a huge mistake. And the diagnosis, I basically had taken my eye off what matters, which is my physical and mental well-being, which unfortunately for a lot of people, that's what happens. And so, you know, there was a phase, I guess the prognosis was that if I didn't want to end up back in the emergency room, I needed to resolve the disconnect between what was happening in my heart and what was happening in terms of reality, because it was a disconnect which was having a negative effect in all dimensions of my life. And, you know, it was at that moment that I made a decision to begin a new and exciting journey of living a life that I truly seek, and designing my life in a way that makes sense to me, which, you know, for the most part, it was a conundrum in a sense that it kept me delayed in being alignment with who I am. And so when I say that, the reality is this: you don't get in life what you want, you get in life what you are. And you know, this experience had a profound impact on me and my life itself, because it helped me to find what matters to me It helped me, it forced me to begin my journey of transformation. And what I discovered personally while I was lying in the emergency room bed was that if you interfere with the natural flow of your body, mind, and spirit, you not only compromise your ability to take in your potential and use it to your fullest ability, but you also compromise your ability to live a harmonious life, a life of well-being, mentally and physically. So I guess, you know, the question for all of us individually is, what matters to you? And so what's most important to me is, you know, comparing how I live. And so therefore, it's about shifting that in order to live consistent with what matters to you. And what matters to me is living in alignment with my heart's desire to help people engage their inner truth, the why they are here, and also to help them make the connection between their happiness and sharing their unique gift with the world. So really it's about, you know, that freedom, that happiness, that safety, that security that we all long for really lies in our commitment to do what life has given us to do. And, you know, it's almost like, I guess you could say, Henry David Thoreau, who said, "Oh God, to reach the point of death only to realize I haven't lived at all." Mm-hmm. You know, so it was this self-awareness that really hit me. If I continued on the same path I had been traveling, I would likely look back one day with regret for having lived a less than fulfilling life. And that's when I began wondering, how many other people are there in this world who are living a life of what appears to be happiness and success, but feel there is so much more in them to live a life of participation rather than accumulation, if you will. And so after much soul searching, I finally decided it was time to write a book, the first of a trilogy. And, you know, it's a book which, again, pronounces my life's mission to impact lives through my book and my speaking. So, you know, all in all, I think at this point in my life, that's really what gives me the I guess, motivation and the inspiration to wake up every morning without a calendar, without a checklist, without a clock, and just be excited to be able to impart some of the things I've learned in my life that could possibly help others. And I guess the final part of that is the, you know, the intersection of science and the consciousness, which I think most people miss out on. And that is, you know, my model, when I first began telling you about my journey here, my model of reality has shifted from that physical, mechanical material to the understanding that the body is a form of modified consciousness. And that pure consciousness is the highest intelligence of self-regulation and healing. So it really starts there because in essence, healing is not just a physical phenomenon. It's a conscious experience as well. Some like to say a spiritual experience as well. And that's what my journey right now has manifested, that the body, mind, and spirit are one. And that's where I try to live my life from after having this journey that I've arrived at and still arriving, always arriving to this point.
I have a question about, because you were a pharmaceutical executive while you were doing bodybuilding competitions. I have done bodybuilding competitions, so I know the time and effort and diet and tracking that goes into it, and it's really consuming. How did those two go together? Because I would think as a pharmaceutical exec, what you were asking people or promoting people to take in pharmaceutical industry didn't align with your physical values. Am I correct? I mean, how hard? I could not push something. I'm trying to think of a prescription. I couldn't. What's the one for sleep? Like I couldn't want people to take certain things knowing that I was living this super healthy lifestyle. That's my first question. Can you answer that one for me?
Yes, of course. And that's a great question. How can I put aside my own lifestyle to influence people to take medications, which I would probably look at as, I'm not so sure about that. Well, you know, that it took me a while to evolve to the point where when I finally retired after 20 something years, to come and reconcile that. But first I had to do that within myself, because I think we live in a world where it's all about scarcity, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the three toxic bits of scarcity, I like to say. The belief that more is better, the myth that, you know, there's not enough, and also that we resign ourselves that it's just the way it is. So when you think that way, and you have, like you said, I'm a bodybuilder who, you know, would seem like I would live this healthy life, but at the same time, there are medications which I'm promoting that I don't necessarily agree with to some degree. That's where you start to, I guess, after a point, look at what you're doing with pharmaceuticals in terms of I'm improving the quality of life for these people. Because without that medication, this diabetic patient would be dead before, you know, 5 or 6 years without it. So right. that medication helps them improve the quality of their life, however, you know, small or big that might be. So like I said, over time, I came to reconcile with that. It was a conundrum in the sense that, like you said, I'm out in the field doing this, you know, helping people. But at the same time, you know, I'm living this life of, hey, get to the gym. And I did try to promote that. You know, the doctors would always ask me, hey, you know, what's a good exercise program for this patient and that patient? So in a sense, I was helping them in terms of giving them practical advice, if you will, on top of, you know, selling the medication at the same time. So yes, it was a challenge, but I reconciled it to the point where at the end of my career, I had come to the realization that it's now time to move on and really promote what healthiness is, as opposed to taking pharmaceuticals just to say, oh, okay, well, we can fix this, but it's not your soul we're fixing, which is really the root cause of not a lot of things and, you know, illnesses that people have.
Right. Right. Okay. So my next question is, you mentioned the book. I want you to tell us a little more about that. And it's a trilogy. So tell me about that, because one book in a trilogy means there's three.
Yes, of course. You got it. So yes. Well, I guess I can start off by saying, you know, the title of the book is Why Is Your Reason for Being? And basically, the first of the trilogy is really about me, my story, how I began this mindfulness journey and wanting to help people. The second book, which I'm currently working on, is more about creativity, and really speaking to how we as a society have learned to be lazy, where there is maybe 1% of the population that are creating new things. You know, if you think about the Stone Age, which was, you know, thousands of years ago, we had to be creative and inventive in order to survive. And that now in this 21st century, we don't have that same, you know, obviously saber-toothed tiger hiding and, you know, preying on us. But at the same time, in order to survive more and more, we've got to become more inventive. So mm-hmm. that second book will be more about creativity and how that plays into our own survival, and the things that we can do to elevate not only ourselves, but the world around us. The third will be more about our coexistence. And that's something in terms of how we treat this planet we live on. You know, we are constantly taking and not really allowing Earth to provide the resources that it offers by really not paying attention. Of course, we're trying to get there, but there are those who, you know, don't feel the need. And I think that's maybe, you know, the harbinger, if you will, of, I hate to say it, mass extinction. You know, if we keep going at the rate we're going and try to roll back things that can maybe help us in that regard. So those are the three books. Again, the first one is still called Why Is the Reason for Being, but each one will be, the next one will be creativity, and the next one after that is coexistence with the planet Earth.
Yes. Now I'm going to read some stuff on you. You are now, because you were pharmaceutical. Are you still military?
No, I retired from the military as well.
Okay. Thank you for your service.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was Air Force, so that one's the best. So
awesome. Man, we've got some similar tracks there, huh?
Yeah. Okay, so you say you are a behavioral change expert, executive coach, and creator of the GROW method.
Yes.
Just trademarks. You partner with corporations to elevate employee well-being and engagement by teaching inner skill development. Talk to me about that, about what you're doing in the corporations with the employees.
Yes. So these days, and it's fortunate that companies have come to realize that mindfulness does play a role in the workplace, particularly when you talk about inner skills, such as productivity, creativity, and ultimately happiness. I mean, you know, can you imagine people showing up to work every day, which a lot of them do, not being happy? I mean, you know, Monday morning rolls around and, you know, they're sick all of a sudden, you know, because of it, the toxic environment that they work in, or they're not doing their passion. So, you know, one of the things I tell people is if you are showing up every day and you don't feel like being there, you need to ask yourself, why am I here? And really dig deep. So with that said, what I try to do with corporations and individuals and employees is to help them find their happy space, if you will. I do a practical exercise where I have them take out a sheet of paper, divide it into four quadrants. The first quadrant is what are you doing that you want to do with your life? The second quadrant is, what are you not doing that you want to do with your life? The third is, what are you doing that you don't want to do? And the fourth is, what are you not doing that you don't want to do? This allows them to look at their life and put it in perspective on paper, where the first and fourth quadrant is what actually enhances your life, while the second and third compromises your life. And when you do that, you're able to see, hey, this is my happy space. This is where I need to be. This is where I need to focus. And you're able to move forward with that. That's one of the things I do. With the GROW method, it's more about, again, building inner strengths. Because the inner strengths that we have, they're not built in the brain. They're built out of the brain. So in other words, if you want to feel more confident, you want to experience more accomplishment or coping. If you want to have a more loving heart, practice more moments of compassion and kindness for others. So how do you do that? Well, the first, obstacle, if you will, is this hardwired negativity bias we have in our brain. And that comes thanks to our ancestors, you know? They had to remember these bad things in order to survive because they had to always be on the lookout. So that is part of us. So what we can do is to, what I offer, incorporate the GROW method, where G is for gain a good experience. You know, think about a time where, or a person or a pet, someone in your past or someone in your life right now who makes you feel good, who you know cares about you, okay? And you're trying to imagine or have an idea as well as a memory of that person. You want that to become a feeling, okay? That's the first thing, gain a good experience. The second thing is reinforce it, okay? Now, this is kind of a critical mass of time, a threshold, if you will, because things have to last long enough in our experience in order to shift from the short-term memory buffer to the long-term storage. And that includes emotional learning, okay? Then the next thing is, while you're doing that, you can feel this experience, this good feeling sinking into you. And that's where I call, again, mindfulness. You're being mindful, you're being aware. And so as it's sinking into you, feeling loved, you're sinking into it. And then that's occupied, you're occupying it. And then W, the last part of that, is where you are associating the positive with the negative. Because remember, we are hardwired with the negativity. So mm-hmm. You wanna associate the positive with the negative. And eventually what you get is, if you stay with it long enough and strong enough, you have a situation where the positive moves into the negative to soothe it, to ease it, and gradually replace it. Now, I'm not saying this is a magic pill and it doesn't happen overnight. This is a process that I've used over the years to where I said, aha, this is it. This is how I can move my life forward in order to grow, to heal pain, old suffering, for children, adults, students, professors, anyone. So that's what I try to do for corporations, is in helping them create happier, more productive, more creative employees.
Well, people work much harder and much better when they're happier, and that's proven. I love the science behind that. So yes, it's a great investment for corporations to spend on figuring out how they can do that, whether it's in the corporation or outside of the corporation. Yes. I want to give a shout out because you received your book, Why Is Your Reason for Being, received endorsement from Deepak Chopra.
Yes. Yes.
Yay. Yes. Like, yeah, how cool is that?
How cool is that? Right. Exactly. I couldn't believe it. You know, it's a story that a lot of people ask me about. Well, how did you do that? I mean, you know, well, before I began my journey, or as I started to write this first book, I had a friend who, you know, was kind of helping me along. And I was like, you know, if I could find somebody to endorse my book, that would be great. I asked some, you know, other high profile individuals who kind of like, you know, brushed me off. I won't say any names, but she said, do you know, why don't you try Deepak Chopra? I was like, Deepak Chopra, who is that?
Oh, no, my idea. God, you're killing
yeah,
me.
I had no idea. So I said, okay, let me check him out. So I go online and, you know, as you probably know, he does a lot of things on social media, YouTube and all that. And so I start listening and watching his videos. I'm like, wow, this is really
He's a pretty big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, wow, this guy is huge. And so I decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to go on Twitter. I happened to see his you know, avatar. And I was like, I said, I love your work. I'd love to send you something if you don't mind. And I'm thinking, okay, this guy's got over 3 million followers. Well, why would he even respond to me, right? Sure enough, within 10 minutes, he goes, yes, you can send it to blah, 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 blah. You know, a coded email. I'm like, ah, wow. Let's see what happens with that, right? I send it to him. It was a sample of my book, a few pages or so. He goes, if you find a publisher, I'll endorse it. Now, mind you, it took 5 years to get there, but
right.
Yeah, we developed a relationship. You know, we conversed from time to time, but yeah, it was a situation where it was a happenstance. And like I said, it was great to have someone like him endorse my book, which validates this journey I'm on for me,
right.
You know, and knowing that this is what I'm supposed to do.
Well, I thought it was amazing, and that's fantastic. I want to go back in time now. Let's go back to you. You mentioned emergency rooms and heart. So take us back to wherever you want to start the journey about your life. I know in high school you said you saw, I mean, Arnold, come on. Yeah. I remember. I was born in 1970. So I know. So tell me your journey, where you came from and what your struggles were.
Well, you know, I grew up in a very stable home, which I was fortunate to have. And my parents are still alive. I'm blessed for that. They've been married for 60 years. Yeah.
Yay!
They only fight on Sunday. No, I'm kidding.
Okay, all right. I mean, I'm a firm believer in scheduling everything. So that works for me. So that's good.
Yeah, there you go.
How awesome.
So yes. It was a good childhood. I'm the eldest of five, and William and Sylvia. Like I said, we were very, it's a very stable home, although there are, you know, things that I look back now and kind of have some anxiety about, particularly with my dad. You know, he was always pushing us to get an A in school. So, you know, it was hard when I was in some grade school where I would bring home what back then was called NI, you know, needs improvement, all over my report card. And that was just, you know, something that I being the eldest one, I felt bad about, because I knew how hard my parents, they woke up every morning, 4 a.m. before they saw us off to school, they were off to work. And so that kind of, you know, made me feel less confident about myself. Mm-hmm. At that young age, I already knew and felt bad that I wasn't making my parents proud. So It took some time. And by the time I got to the eighth grade, though, I found my place in terms of my confidence in getting better grades. I started getting better grades because I was focused on, well, it's not necessarily what your parents want, it's how you want to be perceived. So I started studying harder, and lo and behold, I graduated from high school as a salutatorian. Yes, I brought my grades up, my confidence started to build. Of course, there was a lot of room still to go, but that started my journey of transformation, if you will, in that respect of how I started to see myself and the potential I had within me. And of course that carried over. And I guess, you know, I can tell you a story about being in ROTC, and you probably know a few stories yourself when it comes to ROTC, but there was this ceremony, annual ceremony that we have. And I was the S1. In other words, I was, you know, the administrator, if you will. And each event, I would be the MC. And so we had this big annual event coming up. Here I am, 19 years old, never really comfortable being in front of people and speaking to an audience. I'm like, I was completely nervous, a wreck, but I continued to practice and you know, prepare. And because there was going to be dignitaries like the general from, you know, one of the bases in Louisiana, the mayor, the president of the university, you know, big names that could help me move my career forward, if you will. So the day came, I got on stage, and lo and behold, I blew it away. You know, and that was another milestone for me in knowing and understanding my potential. And you know, it was funny because one of the staff sergeants, Cadet Cadre, he came up to me and says, "Cadet LeVan, I didn't think you had it in you." So like, well, you know, I didn't either, if you really want to know. But so, you know, those kinds of experiences with the grades and with ROTC really kept me moving forward and understanding who I am and what potential I have. And there's still a lot of work to do, but you know, from that point, it's been a long, long road and still is. So, you know, that's really what I think at this point has my dad not understanding why it is that, you know, now that I'm retired, I'm focused on this mind-body thing and helping people. You know, his thing is, and I don't fault him. I mean, I understand, you know, he was a great provider. He always made sure we had what we needed. But it's all about the society we live in. It's about having how many houses you have, how many cars you have, how many, you know, degrees and all this other stuff. So we clash, you know, to the point of sometimes we don't talk, you know. It's bothersome to some point. But then again, I think he understands, even though he won't communicate, where I am in my life right now. So sometimes it can be a struggle between he and I. My mom, hey, she's all for whatever turns you on, go for it, you know? So.
What did you learn that helped you get better grades? What was the switch in that?
I think it was more about confidence in who I am, you know, just being who, being the eldest, it's kind of like you don't have anybody to draw on to look as an example, other than your parents, of course,
right,
which are great models. Believe me, they're hardworking, have always been well respected in the community. But it was just finding my rhythm, my feeling that I can do this. And it was just at the moment that I don't think I planned to make honor roll, but it that semester or that whatever we called it back then,
yeah,
I came home with A's and B's, and I'm like, wow, I made A's and B's, you know, and it's like, wait a minute. If I did it then, I could do it again. Mm-hmm. And so it went from there.
That's great. Yeah. So it was just a matter of doing well at something, getting the confidence to know that you could, and then spring that on. But that was kind of the same thing with the speaking too, right? It's doing it even though you don't feel like you're going to be good at it, realizing that was okay. I did well at that. And then the confidence spring, because now you are a speaker. So it's, less of a big deal. Okay. So small wins, people. It's the small wins. Take those small wins. I'm telling you.
No doubt.
What happened also in high school? So you were salutatorian, which is a great accomplishment, but
Thank
also
you.
That's when you found the magazine, right? For bodybuilding. How did that shift you? Because you're in ROTC, you're doing really well in school, you're gaining confidence. Somewhere in there, you did the public speaking through RO, and then you're doing the bodybuilding. How did that play in?
Yes, so the bodybuilding was kind of a tie-in. Like I said, I was always a sports jock, if you will. I played basketball, football, track, baseball, mm-hmm. everything. And at that point that we were doing that annual spring training, where I just happened to notice this muscle magazine that, you know, like I said, I'd never seen anything like it. It's like, I was just mesmerized, you know. I'll tell you a story here. And it was that trek of where I, you know, went from to being a professional bodybuilder started one night when I happened to be out with one of my high school buddies. And we were at, you know, this club, of course, like normal 17, 18 year olds do, you know, trying to get out and have some fun. And there were TVs back then when obviously there was no flat screen, but TVs everywhere in the club. And I happened to look up and, you know, mind you, there was, you know, tons of beautiful girls around and everything. And all of a sudden I found myself sitting and glued to the TV. Mm-hmm. You know what was on it? Pumping Iron.
Yes. This is pre-internet for those of you who don't understand what we're talking about.
Exactly.
This is like, you have to find the magazine accidentally or be in the store and search for it. And you have to go through the microfiche in the library. This is what we're talking about.
Yes, we're talking about way back.
Dinosaurs were roaming. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a big deal. So Pumping Iron, that's awesome. Okay.
Yes.
So that's on and you're riveted. Again, you went from the magazine to the show, just riveted.
Yes. And you know, I just couldn't, I was like, wow, this is amazing. What how do you do this? What do you need to do? How do you start? And from that point on, you know, I tell my dad, Dad, I'm gonna go buy some weights, you know? So we had this room in the back of the house. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna set up some weights and, you know, start pumping. You know, here, mind you, I was one of the smallest guys in high school, even though, you know, I played football and everything. I made weight maybe, 145, 150. And so I started pumping and, you know, I could see a little progress, but it wasn't until I went to college.
Yeah.
And I think it was like my fourth year, there was this guy walking around with arms bigger than most people's legs. And I'm like, wow, who is this? So we get to talking and long story short, he goes, yeah, why don't you come to the gym with me one day? We went to the gym. Jen, I tell you, I was so sore the next day, I could hardly walk or do anything, but I loved it. I loved it. It was like, wow, I got to do this. You know, from that point on, it was a journey of, you know, just working out first. And then my friend, the guy that I met, he kept, you know, nudging me, hey, you should compete. You should compete. I'm like, okay. I eventually got there. And so, you know, it was a consumption in terms of, how do I balance this need to please my dad, who was like, hey, I want you to move up, you know, in the ranks. He didn't say that, but I understood what his thinking was in pharmaceuticals, which I did, fortunately. But at the same time, I had to balance what I wanted to do for my passion, my bodybuilding at that time. It wasn't easy. But the good thing was I figured out how to get around the intricacies, if you will, of, you know, always have your food prepared on a Sunday so that throughout the week, you got to go see doctors or hospitals and everything. You got your food already there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just one of the little nuances I had to incorporate in order to, you know, keep my passion alive. So, it evolved from that in terms of, you know, just competing and having the goal of becoming a professional, which I eventually did, although it was later in life, because like I said, I was focused on corporate world and really, you know, having to, I guess, at a point, be so stressed out that I wasn't doing that anymore. And that's where I ended up in the emergency room, because I was so focused on moving up the corporate ladder that the stress started, you know, really exacerbating some of the things, like one of the discs that I slipped when I was doing T-bar rows in the gym. And so, you know, that really kind of took me for a loop in terms of not only that injury, but also having to dial back my bodybuilding because of the stress I was having with work. And I think, you know, again, it was just a matter of me trying to figure out how to balance things. Even after, like I said, having to deal with the stress of work, where I was not working out anymore, I was not, you know, hanging out with friends, wasn't relaxing. It was just a situation where everything else was second. It wasn't even on the chart, if you will.
Yeah.
It was all about work.
I want to talk about that. Let's dive into that, because you're having a good balance. You're in college, you're going to work, you're moving up the ranks in pharmaceutical. At what point did you make that shift where work became the priority? Because we all have, most of us who are entrepreneurs, we hit some sort of bottom, right? So was it an injury that did that? Dive into that part, where that shift was, mm-hmm. and where that led you to.
Yes. The shift started in 2003, I think it was, where I started to realize that, you know, there's really more to life than being stuck in an emergency room and with your back in so much pain that you cannot stand up. You can't even
walk. Why did that happen? Why were you in the emergency room?
Well, the disc that I slipped was back in I-84, like I said, when I was doing T-bar rows. And it was an injury that, you know, you probably heard, or maybe you've experienced it, but I heard pop, and it was my L7, 6, and 5, all three of them that were, you know, herniated to the point where, like I said, the next morning I could not stand up straight. And so that kind of healed itself on its own after I went to the doctor, say, just take it easy. Don't, you know, push it. Don't try to be in the gym doing things. Mm-hmm. And I did. I laid off. But as you know, these things have a way of coming back with a vengeance. So, yep. You know, all those years later, I find myself, like I said, at 2003, the pain was so bad, I could barely make it to the emergency room. That's how, and they gave me morphine, and I kept saying, give me more. I still feel the pain. That's how bad it was. Mm-hmm. So it was at that point that I began to realize that, you know, life is more fragile than you think. I mean, so what do I do? Do I continue on the same path, or do I make a shift to you know, make sure that I'm able to, you know, live my life the way I want to, and not be consumed with this accumulation, if you will, that everyone, it's all about having, you know, I've got to make more money here or a bigger house or whatever. So I guess to your question, the shift was a matter of just being conscious and being aware and having, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Revelation that if you continue the way you're going, your life is probably not going to be something that you look at as fulfilling.
True. So you kind of got off the bandwagon of exercising because of the pain and because... And then pharmaceutical became more of a priority because you had more time.
Yes.
Is that kind of, okay. So you have more time, you hurt yourself, you're trying to get better. How was it that you ended up putting, I mean, like that's really huge for any of us who, being an athlete is a main part of your life. When you can't do it, even for a short period of time, we kind of go off the rails.
Yes.
All of us do. But then your friends weren't as important, like nothing. You kind of put everything. Why was that? Why did you?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the competitiveness spilled over from my being an athlete to the corporate world.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, people who, I can remember, and not that I have anything against her, but this one girl, she was like a thorn in my side, if you will. Very, very good at what she does or did, you know? And so I was always trying to outdo her, you know? Mm-hmm. And as we moved up, she would move up. So it was kind of like, okay, who's next, you know? I think that really took me away from just being me and trying to be someone else in order to keep up with this, you know, facade, if you will. Mm-hmm. I'm better than you. So there you go.
It's amazing how when we can't do one thing, all kinds of other things go to crap also.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, oh, now I can't meet with my friends. Yeah, you absolutely 100% can. So where did your health go at that point? And what was your bottom when you decided this has to stop?
Yes. Well, my health deteriorated, not only physically, obviously, with, you know, extreme pain, but also I was finding myself really being impatient with people, just going off for the slightest thing. And, you know, my family even noticed it. What's going on with you, KJ? I mean, and, you know, I could never verbalize it because I really hadn't really, you know, put thought to it, if you will. And so, yes, it was not only a physical thing, but also mental with the stress that I was, you know, having to deal with. It really took a toll on my health. And I think, again, it was just a matter of really realizing that, is this really the life you want to live? Is this really what life is about? And like you said, it's when you are trying to focus on one thing and you forget about all the other things, especially if it's part of who you are, your passion, yeah. Which for me, it was working out and just being an athlete. I love, you know, what I call drip sweat. If I can't drip sweat while I'm working out, that's not good. So if I can't have those things that make me happy, then, you know, it's like, you know what? I need to change something here. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, it wasn't an overnight change. It took a while because, you know, we have this fear of letting go. Again, back to scarcity. Well, what does that mean? That, you know, am I going to, you know, not be able to buy that next big house and what have you? And I eventually came around to understanding and feeling that really, you know, if you're not feeling okay inside yourself, nothing outside will make you happy or make you feel satisfied. It really is about finding inner peace. And so the exact point, I think, came for me when I just decided I'm retiring and I'm going to do what makes me happy. Like I said, design my life in a way that makes me happy and makes sense to me. You know, and again, I don't, you know, look down on people who have a job, but if that job is not serving you, if you're not happy, you need to do some soul searching. You really do, because it really is about what I feel, you know, I believe that the purpose of life is the expansion of happiness, that when you identify those things that bring the greatest joy to your life, then you're on the trail to discovering that inner truth, why you are here, your purpose.
I 100%. How often do you find that people working in a corporation who are not happy are not in the job that's best suited for them? They could stay in the corporation. They could stay with the people. They have a belief in the value and the mission, but they're just displaced within that.
Yes. Yes. You know, there are studies that show that I think upwards of 85% of people are working in jobs that they're not satisfied with.
Yeah.
And those are the people who, you know, drag the bottom line for these corporations. And so, like you said, it's not necessarily that, you know, they're there working, they're not happy, since they're not doing their talent.
Yeah.
First, if I say, hey, you're great at sales, so we're going to make sure we put you in a position where you can experience that and help with that. So if that guy was in, or girl was in, you know, instead of sales, they were doing, I don't know, administration or data stuff, mm-hmm. whatever, then yeah, that employee is not going to be productive as well as they would doing what their calling is, their talent, their specialty, if you will.
Right.
And if we're able to you know, identify that, then that the company and everyone else is all the better for it. I think they say that, you know, basically if people are not being prodded or they're not being recognized, those are the ones that are not producing are being as creative as they could be. And it's even if the manager or supervisor criticizes them, people would rather be criticized than not be, you know, interacted with. So if you're ignored, then you're that's even worse.
100%. Yeah. You know, the other thing is that I will never be, when I worked corporate, I will never be as invested in your company as you are. It was your dream that you lived out, and I'm working for you. And when I think people that are running corporations realize, like, I'm not invested at the same level, but I could be. I could be with the right, I mean, you can get excited about waste management if you have the right team leaders really, you know, showing the way. And you're right. You're right. My husband's company just had a review recently, and they gave a number like 4 out of 5, whatever it was, whatever their rating system was, with no information. Really? No information on like why they came up with that, where it came from, what you could, I mean, and I was like, that's the most, they're going to lose people just because of that. Exactly. Even if you get a 5-star, you still want to know why.
Yes.
Why did you do that? Yeah, interesting. So when you were working in pharmaceutical and you couldn't work out and you realized you're not spending time with your friends, at what point did you decide, because at some point you decided, I'm in the wrong place, this is the wrong fit, and I'm not happy, and I want to be happy, I want to be healthy. And how did you do that? How did your dad, I mean, you said your dad still doesn't quite understand or resonate with what you're doing now, but how did you go from that? And my other question is, how much of a minimalist are you?
How much of a minimalist? Well, I guess I'd have to qualify that with, in terms of in terms of what?
Well, you said that, you know, money and getting the bigger house and more cars and more stuff. And we have, you've said several times, we have this accumulation mindset, right? Or I'll just get it on sale. Because then, I don't know why that makes, I mean, great that you save money on something you don't need, but it's still something you don't need. Yes, we're a very accumulative natured society. Yes. And we want to buy stuff, and that makes us feel better. And it doesn't. Science has proven it doesn't. So at what level, you can still have a nice house and a nice car and own things. And I guess minimalism is different for everyone. But at some point when you realize that things don't create joy and happiness, you want them either because the painting you love, so it brings you joy in that, or the pen you use. And that's why I have flowers on my pen, because my pens kept disappearing. I buy my favorite pens and they would disappear. And I knew my kids were taking them, and it was driving me crazy. So not that they couldn't undo it, but it would take enough effort that they didn't want to. So, I mean, this pen makes me happy to write with. So it's why I purchased this type of pen. And when I run out, I buy a new pack. So buying things isn't completely a bad thing, but we should do it with purpose and intention. So at what level, and for those of us who realize that we become more minimalistic, myself included, and we become super intentional about what we purchase, and what we keep and what we surround ourselves with, because if it doesn't make us happy, if it doesn't bring us joy to look at that painting, we don't want the painting anymore, right?
Yes.
So how much of a minimalist have you become through this journey?
Yes, I tell you, I guess I can tell you the part where you asked, well, where did I arrive? How did I arrive to this point? Mm-hmm. It was mid-afternoon on December 2012. I was sitting in my living room table, and I began to think about my life, the many things I'd accomplished, experienced, and learned along the way, you know, the good things and the things that, you know, still left a lot to be desired. And it was that self-awareness that hit me that, again, if I continued on the same path, I would probably be unfulfilled. So I started at that point, December 2012, sitting at my living room table to think about my life in a way where, as time moves forward, how does that make me feel? And when you say minimalist, I think that maybe that mindset was already there because, for instance, when I moved out my parents' house, you know, once I graduated from college, that was my undergrad, I did not own a TV. And it was because I grew up in a household where my parents said, hey, no TV during the week, during school week. And I think to some degree that is still with me because even right now I have a TV, but I don't even turn it on. So, you know, when you talk about minimalist, I think I already had that in me, but even more so now that I'm on this journey, like you said, that it's really, you know, people think that it's really about, well, let me get this new outfit or this new car and that'll make me happy. Things that are external never will make you happy. Mm-hmm. It's only self-unhappiness. That's where unhappiness comes from. It's about dialing into your inner peace and finding who you are. And the way you do that is, again, you start to focus on where am I and where do I want to be? You set intentions, okay? A lot of people say, well, I'm going to set goals. I like to make a distinction between the two because goals are really what you want to accomplish and what you want to get or do. They're not bad, but the first thing you need to do is set intentions, okay? Because intentions is how you want to be. And when I say that, that's coming from your value system. What do you believe? What are your values? Because if they're not aligned with what it is that you want to accomplish, guess what? You're less likely to achieve them. And, you know, I always like to say one of the posts I did on Instagram around January 3rd of this year was that instead of setting goals, set intentions. Instead of what you want to achieve, consider how you want to feel. And the third thing, instead of equating success with, you know, what you have, equate success with a choice. For example, you want to lose 12 pounds and equate that with, okay, I'm going to, in order to feel healthy, I'm going to start eating, you know, good foods and I'm going to move more and so on and so forth. So there's a difference there. You know, the intention is based on your beliefs and your values. That's where you need to start in order to move your life forward and have those things that make you happy.
So at what point working did you decide, nope, I'm pulling the plug on this way of life and I'm going to do something different? And what did that look like? And how many people thought you were crazy?
Well, including my dad, right?
Yeah. I wasn't going to throw him under the bus. I mean, right.
Well, it's true. You know, I think as you mentioned earlier about how did you reconcile being in pharmaceuticals at the same time you're supposedly living this healthy lifestyle that
right.
kind of doesn't really jive. And I think I already had a plan. I always, you know, had a plan of when I was going to retire and how that was going to look. You know, how much money do you have, you know, mm-hmm. to survive, obviously, in this real world. so all those things played a factor as to when that would happen. But it was in conjunction with, like I said, me understanding that I'm not living a fulfilling life right now. So the timing was one which allowed for the, you know, I guess the fit, if you will, being able to move on in a different direction and still be able to survive in this real world. And knowing that, okay, this is probably going to call for me to be a minimalist, as you pointed out. And I'm okay with that because I was already in that mindset and really loving it. I mean, you know, it's nice. Don't get me wrong, especially for the younger generation to have nice things and cars and all that. But if it's not fulfilling, if you're not feeling like, you know, life is great and you're dealing with anxiety, depression and everything, then you need to really do some introspection and come to, understand that maybe this is not really what life is about. You know, it's really about, I think one of the fundamental messages in my book is the first is the more you give, the more value you create for others and the more enriching your life becomes. So from that perspective, when you live your life from that standpoint, you're more likely to live a fulfilling life and be happy.
Absolutely. I want to wrap up with where you are now. We already know that you're executive coach for corporations. And you're in Houston, Texas, but
correct.
We're recording in December 2020 when there's a pandemic. So no matter when people are listening to this, we now know we can do all things online. So
yes.
So it doesn't matter if you're in Houston or not. Who's the right fit for you? What would you encourage someone who's looking at having you come in and changing the mindset of their employees? What kind of message would you give them? Who are your favorite people to work with? Is there?
Yes. You know, I don't have a specific niche. I guess if you ask me what is the ideal client, I think it's really any and everyone who is wanting to live a fulfilling life, whether it's in your work, your personal life, relationships, your health. Because all those things I have experienced, have different, kinds of ways that I have looked at and have developed and implemented in order to get me through some of the things that involve what I just mentioned, you know, whether it be work, whether it be your health, whether it be relationships. I guess to answer your question, I would love to be able to engage anyone who wants to live a better life and wants to be happy. That's really, you know, again, why are we here? I mean, it's really about helping people engage their inner truth and understanding what it is that makes them happy so that they can connect that with sharing their unique gift. You know, and again, whether it be an employer at a corporation, whether it be the man or woman who's having some issues with their relationships and needs some advice on that, or it's someone who, you know, would like a nutrition plan or something that would help them be healthier.
I love that. What's the best way for people to find you? And I do have one follow-up question with your story, but sure. What's the best way for people to find you?
Yes. So right now I'm working on a website. It's not up yet, but you can reach me on social media. And it's Instagram is KJ_LaVan, KJ_LaVan. And then Facebook is KJ LaVan as well as Twitter. Also, I don't know if you want me to give my email address.
We'll have everything in the links. Do you have a preferred way for people to reach out to you?
Email is probably best. Mm. Yes. KJ LaVan. That's Kilo Juliet Lima Alpha Victor Alpha November Author Alpha Uniform Tango Hotel Oscar Romeo @gmail.com.
Man, that was the military and you coming.
Yeah, I knew you'd like that.
It's like, wow, that's a blast from the past.
Yes.
KJ, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate you so much. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much, Jen. It's been a pleasure, and I loved it. Loved every minute of it.